Corporate underwriting on KPBS offers a unique opportunity for brands to demonstrate their corporate social responsibility as public media brings light to important causes. Your investment can showcase your brand's values and commitment to the public good. Email corporate support at kpbs.org.
Good morning, I'm Lawrence K. Jackson. It's Thursday, March 12th. Thousands across the county have been arrested by ICE. More on one family's experience next, but first the headlines. The federal government is ordering the California DMV to cancel the commercial driver's licenses of roughly 13,000 truck drivers who are in the U.S. without legal status. The recent news leaves drivers currently in the U.S. under a work visa, refugee, or asylum status unable to continue working. A recent court ruling allowed for affected individuals to submit a new license application, but the federal government is now blocking the DMV from processing those applications as well. DMV Director Steve Gordon said that the federal administration is using its war on immigration to remove qualified, hardworking commercial drivers who meet language and safety rules from the workforce. Check out the Midday Edition podcast this afternoon for more on the impacts. Two San Diego County parks are nominees for the Best of California's State Parks poll. It's the second year that the poll's been put on by California State Parks Foundation. Carlsbad State Beach and Anza Borrego Desert State Park are both nominees. Anza Borrego is up for Best Wildflowers, Best Camping, and Best Hiking, while Carlsbad State Beach is a nominee for Best Beach. An executive director for the foundation says the poll is a fun way to share what you love about your favorite park. You can find the poll at calparks.org/votebestof26. Today is the start of a short-lived heat wave. A heat advisory is in effect starting at 10 a.m. today and ends at 8 p.m. tomorrow. Forecasters say a high-pressure system combined with winds out of the east will bring widespread heat along with it over the next 2 days. The National Weather Service says coastal temperatures are likely to reach the low 80s and land in the 90s across our inland valleys. NWS says this weekend will still be unusually warm for this time of year, but not sweltering. From KPBS, you're listening to San Diego News Now. Stay with me for more of the local news you need.
KPBS has partnered with StoryCorps for the One Small Step program. We invite you to sign up to have a conversation with a person that may have different views, so you may talk, not about politics, but to understand each other better. Sign up at kpbs.org/onesmallstep.
ICE agents have arrested thousands of San Diegans since President Trump launched his mass deportation campaign. One San Diego family shared their detention story with reporter Gustavo Solis.
It happened so fast. On the morning of February 2nd, Alejandro Olivo and his son Brian are in Del Mar, still in their truck, preparing for a landscaping job.
We're not going to open the door. We
could come in. ICE agents surround the truck. Brian starts recording while Alejandro calls his wife, Veronica. Agents smash the driver's side window.
What are y'all doing?
To Veronica, it sounds like gunshots.
Justamente cuando él me estaba hablando, pues fue cuando le rompieron la ventana.
The phone goes dead. All Veronica knows is that ICE agents have taken her husband and son. Alejandro and Brian are among the thousands of San Diegans who have been arrested by ICE during the mass deportation campaign. And what happened to the Olivo family over the next few weeks was once unthinkable, but is now commonplace.
Muchos momentos en que lloramos y gritamos. En ningún momento, pues de verdad nos rendimos.
Veronica says that those weeks were filled with fear and anger, but the family never gave up. And neither men are U.S. citizens. Alejandro is undocumented, but he's also a father of five, has lived and worked in the U.S. for decades, and owns his own business. Brian has legal status through the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, also known as DACA. Neither of them have violent criminal records. The first thing Veronica did after the arrest was call everyone she knew.
Creo que en una hora, la casa ya estaba como llena.
Within an hour, the house was full of people ready to help. They called lawyers, brought food, even donated money to cover the rent and utility bills. Each member of the family dealt with it in their own way. Beckham's, the second oldest son, says that he was initially in shock.
I pulled myself together. I saw myself kind of as maybe the head of the family, since our actual head of the family was not with us.
He set up a GoFundMe campaign that so far has raised almost $20,000. His sister, Charlene, felt her father's absence at night.
I didn't feel safe. Every time he was home, he'll hear like any little noise and it'll make me feel safe because I'm just like, oh, like if my dad's hearing it, he's gonna tell us.
Charlene is a sophomore at Lincoln High School. Word of her dad's detention got around, and before the family knew it, strangers were dropping off donated food. All that support helped Ian, the family's second youngest.
It felt really good to know that some people actually did care about us at that time, because I thought at first we were going to be struggling, because my dad, money, you know?
Ian says that he struggled to process his emotions.
It felt something like, just kind of like broke inside me, because my dad, my brother, they're like great people. My dad's the most greatest person I know.
Brian was released within a day, after ICE agents realized he's a DACA recipient and protected from deportation. When he got out, helping his mom and siblings felt like a full-time job. One of the few distractions was watching his favorite soccer team, San Diego FC.
Just being able to yell, getting that relief out, you know, just being happy. The whole 4 hours I'm here, 5 hours that we spent here at the tailgate, I'm just happy to be here, you know?
On his first game back, a small group of supporters turned their back during the national anthem. It was a small act of protest against ICE enforcement in San Diego. Brian did not turn around. He loves this country and, as a DACA recipient, feels the need to show his support as much as possible. But on that day, one line of the anthem nearly broke him.
But this time when that part was like the land of the free, I'm like, my dad's not even free, and that's the only sentence out of the whole anthem that I kind of did put my head down and I wanted to start crying for sure. It was because my dad's not free. This ain't the land of the free as of now, you know?
After a month of detention, a lawyer secured Alejandro's release. A judge cited reasons why he should not be detained. He runs a business, contributes to the community, and is raising multiple U.S. citizen children. Alejandro was working the day KPBS visited the family. Veronica says he still doesn't like to talk about his time in detention too much. When he came home, she instantly noticed how much weight he'd lost, and his face was very pale, especially for a landscaper who's used to working in the sun. Veronica wants other families going through this to know that they are not alone, that they shouldn't be afraid to ask for help.
Y estamos más fuertes que nunca para poder salir adelante.
She says the Olivo family is stronger than ever. Gustavo Solis, KPBS News.
In Tijuana's red light district, thousands of women rely on sex work to survive. But a new study from SDSU says financial support and training can improve their lives. Health reporter Heidi DeMarco talked with the lead researcher about the impact.
The study followed 120 female sex workers over 3 years. The women took part in a program that combined small business loans with health education. Elizabeth Reed is the lead researcher.
We found meaningful improvements in financial stability, reduced substance use, increased savings, improved condom negotiation, and greater self-confidence.
The program is called Estima, the Spanish word for self-esteem. Participants receive small loans up to $1,000 and training to start businesses, from selling cosmetics and cleaning products to catering food. Elisa Sabatini with Los Niños de Baja California helped run the program.
The trainings that occur are related to women and violence, nutrition and health education, also business support.
Reed says one of the most powerful parts of the program was the support women found in the groups.
I think the groups really created this trusted space where women could talk openly, share strategies, and support each other.
Heidi DeMarco, KPBS News.
The typical SDG&E customer is paying almost $200 a month to keep the lights on. For the latest installment in our Price of San Diego series, anchor Debbie Cruz spoke with reporter Katie Heisen about why the rates have climbed so high.
Katie, so how big of an increase in rates are we talking about?
So if you're a typical SDG&E customer, you likely paid about $185 for last month's electric bill. In 2009, when rates were at a low, it would have cost you under $20 to use the same amount of electricity adjusted for inflation.
You looked into the factors that contributed to this. What did you find?
To understand that rapid rise, we have to go back to the energy crisis in 2001, when lawmakers put a cap on the rates utility companies could charge. Then in 2007, officials said SDG&E power lines were partly responsible for a deadly wildfire season. And so the company began taking these expensive steps to make their power grid less likely to spark fires. Then in 2014, California lawmakers lifted that cap on rates, and so that allowed SDG&E to raise their prices to recover those expenses. Company leadership told me state laws have mandated a lot of their rising costs, not just for wildfire safety, but clean energy improvements and replacing aging infrastructure.
So what did you discover after tracking the company's profits for this story?
Even though ratepayers end up covering most of these costs, shareholders front the money for the initial investment, and SDG&E provides a return on their investment. The company says they need to offer a high return to attract investors because it's a riskier investment than like a bond. The percentage they're allowed to profit is regulated. It's usually around 10%. But the more the company spends on investments, the higher amount of profit that 10% translates to. And so the company's annual profit more than tripled between 2007 and 2024.
How do SDG&E's rates compare to other utilities?
They're very high, 2.5 times higher than the national average and higher even than the California average. A spokesperson told me that's because their customers tend to use less energy. And so to recover these fixed costs from less energy, they have to charge more for what customers do use. He said if their grid was somewhere where usage was closer to the national average, their rates would decrease by half.
So what can people do to lower their monthly bill?
Well, there's typical recommendations, weatherproofing doors and windows, using blackout curtains, things that help keep the temperature comfortable using less energy. There's also a couple programs for lower-income customers that give you a discount if you recently lost your job or you're receiving benefits, or even if your income's a little bit higher than that, up to almost $53,000 for one person, you might qualify. If you can afford the upfront cost, of course, there's solar, but it could take you about a decade to break even with the savings.
You covered the announcement of SDG&E's annual profits recently. It wasn't what you expected.
That's right. They've trended toward $1 billion annually in recent years, but they just announced under $600 million in profit for last year, well under what I was expecting to see. And that's largely because of a very costly one-time decision by regulators. Essentially, they had all these expenses that were approved, and they spent the money expecting to recuperate those costs. And then regulators said they were actually on the hook for them after all.
Is there an end in sight to these rising rates?
Not yet, I'm sorry to say. In fact, in January, state regulators approved more wildfire mitigation spending, and that's expected to raise monthly bills again for most SDG&E customers starting next month.
That was reporter Katie Heisen speaking with anchor Debbie Cruz. For years, politicians, environmentalists, and health advocates have been trying to find solutions for the Tijuana River sewage crisis. Environment reporter Tammy Murga says now San Diego's largest business organization is weighing in.
The Tijuana River sewage crisis has received widespread attention in recent years. Milestones have been reached.
But not nearly enough to address this problem.
Emily Young is with the Previs Foundation. She says the decades-long problem is complex. To keep the focus on solutions, the San Diego Regional Chamber of Commerce commissioned a new report from experts on the topic. It lays out 5 key ways Mexico and the U.S. can end the crisis. Chris Kate is the chamber's president.
This five-pillar framework gives us a comprehensive binational guide for action.
The report lays out solutions both countries are already working on, but it also proposes new measures, like establishing a binational maintenance fund and a binational committee to unblock stalled projects. Tammy Murga, KPBS News.
San Diego's largest school district says it's found ways to close its budget gap for the next fiscal year. But reporter Katie Anastas says things could still change as the state finalizes its budget.
Back in December, the San Diego Unified School District was facing a $47 million deficit for the next fiscal year. A lot has changed since then. The district has eliminated staff positions and brought in additional revenue. There are also new expenses. The district reached an agreement with its teachers' union that sends monthly payments to special education teachers whose caseloads are above the agreed-upon limit. Overall, district leaders say next year's budget is balanced. But the following year, the district could be facing an $87 million deficit. Superintendent Fabiola Bagula says now is the time to start planning.
We need to continue to refine our multi-year plan leading up to the final budget adoption.
The district adopts its budget in June, typically before the state finalizes its budget. For now, the district has to make assumptions about how much money it will get from the state.
So if additional resources do materialize, we want to be thoughtful and strategize about how they could support our students and schools.
The district held a community input session Thursday night. Attendees asked that the district fund after-school tutoring, language immersion, and trades programs. Katie Anastas, KPBS News.
Transportation officials yesterday broke ground on a bike and transit project on University Avenue. Metro reporter Andrew Bowen says it's been planned since at least 2012.
The University Bikeway will run 2.8 miles from San Diego's border with La Mesa to Estrella Avenue in City Heights. It'll include separated bike lanes, measures to prevent speeding, and new boarding platforms for some of the county's highest ridership bus routes. Traffic collisions on the corridor have killed at least four people over the past decade, including a six-year-old boy last October. Here's City Council member Sean Ila Rivera.
This is a safety and beautification project. And it's one that addresses not theoretical safety hazards, but real life ones. This is a deadly stretch of road. And the investments that are being made here are going to save lives.
The University Bikeway is scheduled to open to the public in September 2027. Andrew Bowen, KPBS News.
That's it for the podcast today. As always, you can find more San Diego news online at kpbs.org. I'm Lawrence K. Jackson. Thanks for listening and have a great day.
KPBS Podcasts, where San Diego's voices come alive.
Don't let the algorithm tell you what you like. Find things that you really enjoy.
It's really powerful to see how the voice of the students impacted so much change.
Ed, seguimos aquí. We're still here.
Listen now at kpbs.org/podcasts or wherever you listen.